everyone. It's Mary Lou Tyler. This week's guest is going to be just a huge level of awareness for you. Why? Because if you have been reading the news about AI, artificial intelligence, the first thing we think about is, oh my gosh, my prospecting job is no longer. Well, I'm here to tell you that that is the furthest thing from our today's guest, Robert Schell. His last name is K-A-L-L with two things over the A, but it's pronounced Schell. He's the CEO and co-founder of a company called Cien. And I am excited about having him on the show today because his view and his take on artificial intelligence is all about human relationships and having you guys flourish in closing opportunities, closing deals. Now, we're probably going to focus more top of funnel today because that's what I know, but he can take it all the way through. So if you want to know more information, I'll put all of his contact information after we have our conversation so you can learn more about what they're doing. So first question is, Robert, well, first, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Mary Lou. Pleasure to be here. I'm a huge fan. I read your books.
And okay, so I'm going to bite. What is the word? Why did you use the word Cien as the name of your company?
So Cien means 100. So many things good are 100. Getting 100 on your test, giving 100% effort, you know, reaching $100 million revenue. All of those things are things that we strive for in life and business. We also call it Cien because we wanted to have a global company. I'm calling today from Barcelona, where we have our R&D center. We also have an office in Dallas and one in Miami. And I really wanted to create a company that was 100 times better than the previous companies we worked on before, which were more in the SaaS, standard SaaS business. This is what we called an AI-first company.
Okay. So you heard my opener, you know, those of us who study this and love the top of funnel like I do, AI is this looming thing over the horizon that, you know, it's looked at in some ways as being a negative for sales executives who develop business. But you're saying that that is the furthest thing from, you know, what you're discovering and what you're working on. Can you share some of the initiatives that your company is working on and why that's important for us at Top of Funnel?
Sure, absolutely. So who wants to buy something for $100,000 from a robot, right? That's just not going to happen. But at the same time, you want to, as a sales leader, as a sales executive, as a sales development rep, whatever your title is, you want to have the most amount of information at your disposal as you possibly can. You want to understand what really drives success for you as an individual and for the company as a whole. And that's the type of stuff that you can actually get with AI. So we have a very simple view of the world when it comes to sales. There are three components to it. And those three components are your lead and pipeline quality, your rep attributes, how your reps are behaving, and then you have the macro factors. And I can go in a little bit more in detail on each one of those if you like.
Yeah, that'd be great. Let's start with the pipeline quality.
Right. So a pipeline, everybody knows there are good leads and bad leads, but people have not until now spent a lot of time to determine exactly what causes good and bad leads. And we are drilling down, and there's a myriad of factors here, but we're drilling into two key concepts. One we would call fit and one we call interest. So fit is the stuff that, you know, are attributes of the lead that you tend to not be able to change. So, for example, where they're located, what industry they're in, and the type of contact person you have, the title and so forth. If you have a bad fit lead, it is very hard to turn it into a great deal. On the other hand, you have interest, and that everybody knows that, you know, a warm referral is much easier than, you know, cold calling someone from a list. And that's what interest really measures. Your level of awareness and expressed interest from a prospect. And in some cases, the leads come in warm with high interest. In some cases, they come in cold. And the thing that's new about AI is that we can actually measure that, and we can measure how it changes over time, because a great sales development rep, for example, can bring up the interest a lot by providing an effective value proposition and a meaningful engagement through whatever means is doing. Whereas, of course, if you're not applying any, you know, effort, the interest is most likely going to stay very low. Or if you have a high interest and you fail to follow up. So these are types of things that, you know, in the past, it was really hard to measure. But with AI and the statistical methods that we're using, we can actually get a very accurate measurement of this on a lead-by-lead basis.
So let's stop there for a second. So one of the biggest issues that I also see is we may be able to collect the data in a rudimentary way. By no means is it systematic or mechanized. But we don't necessarily apply what we've learned into a repeatable process. So right. Is AI designed to not only diagnose or find descriptively where we are, but is it making recommendations as to how we should organize our sales conversation canvas, if you will, for lack of a better term,
absolutely,
in the next iteration of our conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you don't mind, we'll get to that in a second, because I wanted to talk about the two other factors and you see how they all fit together. Create this, what you call the canvas, right? Because there are two other aspects that are equally important. One is the rep factors. And there, you know, you have things like work ethic. A measurement of the apply of meaningful activity that a rep is doing on a day by day basis, and it varies a lot from rep to rep, and it's not just about, you know, calling 100 things, but it's about meaningful activities. So we measure a lot of those things by looking at exactly what's going on with CRM activities and so forth. Another factor is product knowledge or industry knowledge. A buyer obviously always wants to talk to someone that's knowledgeable and has a lot of insight. And many times, especially when you're ramping up a sales team, your sales team does not have those skills. So that's a really big factor. A third thing that we look at a lot is things like closing ability, the ability to not just get a deal up to an opportunity stage, but actually close the deal and moving it past the final hurdles. And the last thing that we look at, and we look more at that on an aggregate than on an individual person, is what we call team mood. And there is the overall engagement with the company and the things that are detractors and boosters in terms of the things. So many organizations are challenged with one or two things. They may have a terrible commission system that no one understands, or they may have a product launch that failed and so forth. And we're measuring all of that stuff for various services and so forth. And we can actually blend that into the models that we're creating about how your sales team is working. So that was the people factors. And again, it sounds like, how can we know all of those things? But it's actually possible to extract a lot of that from data that you already have in your CRM. And then right. It's also possible to get some of that through by asking people. Because people will answer that unless it takes them 2 hours to answer the survey. Our survey takes 10 seconds. So that's, you know, a very, very easy question to answer. And the last thing that people can't forget, and I told everybody that I called from Barcelona, and this is a story from my previous life. I had built up a high velocity sales team, and we were doing an acquisition, and we had a large team here in Barcelona that we brought on, and we made our plans. And then we were doing fine in May, June, July, and then August came, and we basically hit a big fat zero on our sales results. And we had just not built in things like seasonality into our models. And that is right. Something that in some cases are really affecting your ability to get to your numbers. Another factor would be competition, where your competition all of a sudden changes drastically. And we are able to measure that in ways that you may not have been able to do before. Wow. So again, those three things, you know, your lead and pipeline factors, your people attributes, and your macro factors, they together make that environment. We call it the 360 sales environment. And when you understand all three of those things, you can get to what you asked about before, which is start modeling what's going to happen next. And then you can do the whole thing around what could you do differently to get better results? Because once you have it in an AI engine, you can test a million different combinations, and it takes fractions of a second to test each one. And you can find where your, what we call the low-hanging fruit is. And a lot of times the low-hanging fruit is around giving the right leads to the right people.
Hmm. Wow. So, of course, next question is going to be more about the data itself. Everyone admits their databases are pretty dirty, or they're not necessarily enhanced with conversational data because of the burden it puts on reps to do what they think of as data entry. Is there a process that you like to see, or does it not matter at all what the data is currently in their current situation? Or is this also an opportunity for companies to start collecting the meaningful data going forward?
Right. So the listener that listens right now says, you know, well, I can't use this type of stuff because my data is too bad.
Right.
I don't know if you remember this song by Michael Jackson. I'm not going to sing it, but it goes like, you're not alone. You know, that's exactly what's going on there. We have never encountered a company that has been proud of the data quality that they have in their yeah. in their CRM system. It just right. does not happen. And the reason for it is very easy. For the most part, there's not a lot of incentives for sales reps to put in 100% of their data in there.
Right.
For various reasons. We don't have to go into that now, but it's just a fact. So right. what we're doing is that we are applying AI to that problem too. That's kind of like where we started. And we have some services around that that allows you to understand what the true state of your data is, because there are patterns. AI is essentially a pattern recognition machine. And there are right. patterns to your inconsistency on your quote unquote crappy data as well. And we're applying those patterns, and then we can compensate for a lot of things. We know that people are, for example, skipping opportunity stages because they it takes too long to enter. They want to either sandbag show more in the pipeline and so forth.
Right.
So
that's a gaming the system thing. Is what I call it.
So here's the thing. If you're gaming the system in a consistent way, we will be able to detect that. Same thing with things like, you know, when people are putting in all their activities at the Friday afternoon, there are patterns to that. Same thing when people are missing a lot of information. And the last thing, which is very common in most large enterprises, is that you change methodology in your Salesforce or whatever CRM you're using several times during the course of things. So like data that you compare to a year ago is not apples to apples. You used to prospect using the lead module. Now you're prospecting using the accounts model because you moved to account-based marketing or whatever. Those are super common things. And that's where you can apply AI so you really get an apples-to-apples true sense of what's in your database. So that's really a super important step that we spent so much time working through and finding solutions to. And then once you have that, that's when you can start making these types of predictions, because now you have much greater confidence in your data than you had before.
Well, the other thing too is, let's face it, you know, there are so many tasks out there in the world. We used to kid ourselves saying, you know, death by task. There's so many tasks out there. I would think that would feed into an AI system really nicely to see exactly what's being done and what's not being done and what's being followed up on and what's not. So
right.
there are a plethora of records that are generated automatically by systems for activities right. that never get done.
Right. No, there are so many tasks out there. And right. and there are today also many companies are using, you know, automated solutions to record a lot of things. So what we're yep. finding is that there is a bunch of problems with CRM data, but there's also a bunch of signal, as we call it in the data science world. In other words, information that we can use to make predictions.
Right. Right. So all of you sitting out in the audience, you're not off the hook with your dirty data when it comes to AI.
No, obviously better data is better. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But if we were saying, okay, only people with perfect data need to apply to use this new technology, we would have absolutely zero customers. And
it would be birds chirping in your weight room. There wouldn't be much going on.
Right. So again, these are the types of things that like are prerequisites, and we spent a lot of time building technology and services around. I want to talk a little bit about one thing that I think is really interesting, and that is the value of a lead. I don't know if you have spent any time like thinking about that. What is a good lead? What is a bad lead? And you know, how should you value it when you're giving it to a sales development rep? Or how much should you value an opportunity when you're handing it over to an account executive?
Yeah, we think about that all the time. I mean, even in predictable revenue back in 2011, there's a chapter on this, like, seven fatal sins, and one of a CEO or C-suite director level, that was one of them, that they don't understand the value of a lead. And that's why Aaron, in the book, in the intro, said he had a $5 million loan or VC funding for a company that went under because he did not know the value of a lead.
Right. And you can I remember that story, and that was on the quote unquote aggregate or average level, right? And mm-hmm. and in to some degree, yet that information is just standard record keeping and making sure that you understand how you're being well. What I and our companies are trying to do now is to bring it down to individual record levels.
That's
and of course,
great.
Yeah, of course you can't get an exact value for every single lead with limited data, but what you can do is to create a statistical value where you can significantly right. differentiate the value between a lead that right. is, you know, very cold and with bad fit, which yep. is extremely unlikely to turn into a deal, and one that just warm, you know, for example, a friend referral or something like that in a perfect mm-hmm. Company, right? And the difference in value between those is not a factor, like it's not double the value or something like that. It's a factor of 10 or in some cases 100. So there's right. a huge difference in value of those. And the thing that oftentimes trips up and causes a lot of discord in sales teams and so forth is where people sense the value, but they have no way of measuring it.
Right.
And that's again where we are developing something we call the CN value chain, where we are actually using AI to measure the true value of each and every lead and each and every opportunity. And that's obviously not the value of the final deal; it's a fraction of it, since right. you know only certain leads become things. And the story I tend to tell is about Bob and Sue. And this is how you can very easily improve your sales productivity if you think about it. You have Bob and Sue. Both are pretty good salespeople, according to the thing. Bob sold for $80,000 last quarter. Bob sold for $100,000 last quarter. Sue sold for $80,000. So the old way of looking at it would have been that Bob is a better salesperson. Mm-hmm. But if you dig in and you see the true value of the leads and opportunities they received, you can see that Bob received $50,000 worth of leads and opportunities, and Sue received $20,000. So she was able to add a lot more value for her time in the last quarter than Bob was. And right. if you want to, in your organization, maximize your overall sales productivity, instead of having that big discrepancy about the value given, even it out. And that alone can give you 10, 15% increase in sales productivity. And in most companies that we work with, getting sales productivity up of just a few percentage points is a fantastic thing, because it goes straight to the bottom line, in a sense, because they sell high gross margin software products or something like that, right?
Right. I mean, we spend a lot of time manually, a lot of guesswork, trying to maximize the return on effort.
Right.
And, you know, this is like, turn the switch on and it does it for you. I mean, it's to me, this is transformational to the operations of a sales team. I mean, it would just really, for everyone to become more productive, given the skill levels, you know, being disparate, or maybe you've got the outliers and you've got the people who are in the bell curve. This would help even that out, so you have a more predictable pipeline and a better forecast, I would think.
Absolutely. Both a better forecast, and then you can also start to identify what's causing these quote-unquote underperformers to do it. If they just started yeah. yesterday, it's very easy. They don't have the product skills. They probably don't have a lot of leads received. But if they've been in the company for a year and a half and they are still not adding a lot of value compared to their peers, then it's mm-hmm. about looking at work ethic, looking at the training that you provided them. Are they missing their closing skills, which would translate into, you know, being able to articulate things? Are they able to navigate? If you're selling a B2B product, oftentimes a big skill is to be able to navigate the hierarchy. So one of the things we do a lot for our customers is to look at the stakeholders on each deal. Who have they brought in? Understanding their true seniority, their true job functions, and so forth. And then we can many times find that the approach the company has taken up till now has actually been detrimental because they are talking to the wrong people. We find that if they are avoiding talking to certain people, at least avoiding talking to them until the last part of the deal, they are having much better success. And just kind of like a freebie, avoid talking to the IT department if you're selling a technology solution to a non-IT department stakeholder until you absolutely have to. That is just a pattern that repeats itself over and over again, because IT departments by very nature are risk averse, and for them there's just every new solution that you bring into the table is more risk and more headache. Whereas, of course, if you're selling a marketing solution, for example, the marketing leader is looking for it to solve his problem or her problem. So stuff like that would be things that we are seeing all over and over again. And again, in each case, each company is unique, and we do this analysis. When we create an AI first company, the whole idea is to provide that type of analysis within the box of the software, as opposed to have to rely on super expensive analysts and so forth.
Right. So can you tell us a couple of stories that even sort of wowed you when you started implementing some of into clients, not naming the clients, but like what was that wow factor when you went in and worked on a client and fixed them, quote unquote, and right, got them up and running?
Well, again, I may have used the term before that called the low hanging fruit. And that basically comes to a very simple concept. Don't send great leads to bad reps, because we call those reps the productivity traps. They, for whatever reason, lack the ability to turn them into good opportunities. And again, it could be a myriad of reasons, but and many times it's a combination of one or two factors. When you do that, you're destroying value for your sales organization. And at the same time, you may have what we call the untapped potential reps, where you have some great reps that, because of the territory that they've been assigned to, for example, because they've been assigned to this, you know, terrible territory that just has way fewer opportunities and leads are much less valuable than the rest, that they are hard workers, they have the ability to close deals, and they're doing great with this stuff they're getting, but they're receiving so little that they are essentially underperforming just by that factor. And just spending a little bit of time evening that out. And you don't do it with leads that you have or like opportunities you have in the pipeline. You just do the new stuff as it comes in. And that immediately can give you, you know, 3%, 4%, 5% productivity increase. And again, That's a lot. That is a lot for these types of companies that sell high gross margin software or technology services.
So it's like an intelligent routing versus a round robin. What they do lot of folks do now is round robin. This is more of intelligent routing to the appropriate person who can handle the opportunity at a faster clip or with more finesse or whatever the requirements are to get it to opportunity and to close. I love that. That's great.
Thank you. And again, this is something that we can do in a very short period of time, because all you need to do is to start the day you realize that this is occurring and change your behavior a little bit. You don't have to change anything else, you know, except this distribution that you have. And then you see that thing, and then you go back and look at the, you know, these people that are underperforming, and you do a deeper analysis of what's going on with them. And in many cases, it's just one or two factors that are not clicking with them, and they kind of know it, but now you can measure it and you can see whether they can make progress on it. If there's a training issue, for example, you know, let's go back to school with those guys and figure out what it is that they're missing. If it is a work ethic thing, then it's more around, you know, activity management and making sure that someone is checking in with them every single day, right?
Right, right. So tell us a little bit about the playbook portion. I remember reading on your website that, you know, the playbook can be enhanced so that you know why deals close, You may get role-based guidance on the activities that lead to revenue. That's a big one for me. You know, like what is the perfect route or perfect path or perfect map to get to closed?
I'm gonna start with just an observation, and maybe some of the people in the audience doesn't agree with me. But this has just been my observation. I have had the privilege to work with some really awesome sales leaders over the last 10-15 years. And every single time I've done that, they have presented their playbook to me. And it has been around one guy was very big on training. One other guy was very big on activity management. The third person, she was more concerned about, you know, the overall team culture and mood and so forth. And each one of them had really good points, and they knew how to affect that, and they had plans in place. The thing is that when they come into a company, all three of them cannot be correct that one of them is the most important. In each company, in each situation, you have unique factors that you, if you just apply the playbook that you were successful with in your last company, you might be missing some huge opportunities. And that's where we are coming in. We can tell you all three of those things and many more factors. And then we can tell you right now in this company, this thing is the most important thing. You need to work on team mood or culture and so forth, because people are disillusioned and demotivated. Or in another company, it's all about the product, and the product is not doing what it needs to do yet. So you have to kind of go back and ensure that that one is that piece is more competitive, right? So the whole point here is there is not a one size fits all playbook for a sales leader to come in and do.
Right.
And that's a temptation that many people have, that they're just going to apply what worked last time.
Yeah, that's great. So we're going to wrap up here pretty quickly, but I wanted to make sure the audience understood that this is a solution that spans across the sales organization. So sales leaders will benefit, of course, account execs, business developers, operations, and even marketing. We didn't talk a lot about marketing because I don't have that piece of the pie in my audience, but I can imagine that lead generation would be something that would benefit from this type of system if put into place.
Right. Just to talk 2 seconds about how marketing can use a system like us. Marketing and sales many times have different views of what has happened. And, you know, I've sat through so many business review meetings where marketing comes in and says, they had a great month, we generated 1,000 leads and blah, 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 blah. And sales come in and say, we had a terrible month, our leads did not work at all, you know, like blah, blah, blah.
Leads,
right?
Are crap.
Exactly. Yeah. And with a system like this, you can basically, in a more objective way, measure how these leads that you got in the last month are either the same or better or worse than leads that you had before, and the quantity and the aggregate value of them. And that can just remove a lot of disputes and you know, objective things that causes conflicts between different departments and so forth. And just say, okay, here's the facts. These types of leads, we have great success with these. These types of leads, we should look at why are we generating them? What are the sources of them? And perhaps do less of that. And then we can focus on other things. So we're not trying to solve everything. There's a ton of great tools out there for marketers using AI and so forth. We're trying to help, you know, settle that little dispute that you many times see in businesses by saying, when these leads that marketing has generated gets to sales, this is what happens. And if you just change the mix a little bit there, you are more likely to have success.
Yeah, I mean, it it takes that argument out of the picture, that sentiment of I believe it's this way, it's emotion based. We're flipping that on its side and saying, yep, here's the facts of this particular lead and why it should have been successful. And then that opens up a whole new conversation about, all right, what do we need to do to make it better so that we are taking those leads from marketing and processing them in a way that yields the results that we should be getting? It changes the whole conversation from pointing fingers to one of more of, you know, of working together, which is what we want ultimately.
Absolutely.
So How do we, this is so exciting. I love it. So this is something that attaches, is it an app that attaches to common CRMs, or how is it rendered out in the world?
Yeah. So we are an app that right now works with Salesforce. Other CRM systems will be added later. And it allows you to, on your phone, think about it like a Fitbit, if you are familiar with the Fitbit app.
It's something I've got my thing on right now.
Oh, yeah, me too. So every morning I check my Fitbit to see what's going on with my sleep, how many calories I burned last night or yesterday, right. Stuff like that, right? Same thing. When you wake up in the morning and you check the CN app, you can see what's going on with my pipeline, what's my end of month prediction, what's my end of quarter things, what are the kind of key takeaways that I should do today. And that is different if you're obviously, if you're a sales executive, if you're a manager, or if you're an individual rep. And it gives you that stuff just on your phone in real time. And it's not some kind of business intelligence, super complicated thing that you have to go to 3 months of training to understand. It's just right there on the, in your app, and you can take actions. And the cool thing about AI is that every time we get a piece of feedback, so for example, sometimes we provide advice that does not make sense to that particular individual for whatever reason. All you need to do is, just like in the Pandora, for example, if you hear a bad song, you do the thumbs down. You do the same thing here, and the AI engine learns from that and understands that, hey, this whatever advice we provided here does not make sense to this person, and it could be for whatever reason, and then we can tailor that and build that in so that the algorithms continues to learn. That's the big difference between the traditional way of programming and the AI way, right? New data makes the algorithm smarter and they continue to learn.
Right. It continues to get stronger and stronger as it moves in along in life because it's collecting more data points and with instruction in some cases, and it's outputting basically the behavior that you're trying to achieve. So I love this. This is great. So how do we get a hold of you? So it's cien.ai, cien.ai is the name of the website.
Yep.
How do we connect with you on LinkedIn? Are you on LinkedIn? I'm sure
yes,
you are.
Yes, I am. I am. And I am always accepting inbound requests from sales professionals. So my LinkedIn is just LinkedIn-IN, I think is the URL for more than that. My full name, Robert Kall, K-A-L-L.
Shell, everybody.
It's okay if you don't pronounce it correctly. I know it's a weird thing. But I'm there, and I'm also on Twitter with the same name, Robert Kall, one word. So please connect with me. I love to have conversations. As I said, we are calling right now today from Barcelona, but we're also have an office in Dallas, and I've been spending a lot of time there and in other metropolitan areas in the United States. So if you're interested in meeting up, just connect with me.
Wonderful. And I'll be sure to put all the contact information in the show notes for those of you who are driving and listening to this podcast. And I really appreciate your time. This is, you know, for a data geek like I am, this is like, woo, this is great stuff. I just love it. I mean, we try to band-aid all of what you're talking about, and it just doesn't come out the way you want it to. So to have an app like this that helps get that kind of baseline started so we can focus on what we're supposed to be doing, which is having better conversations anyway, makes our job so much easier. So thank you so much for your time, Robert. Really enjoyed this a lot.
Okay, me too. Thanks a lot, Mary Lou. And again, thank you so much for the books that you've written. They've been super helpful for me personally.
Oh, well, wonderful. I'm so happy to hear that. Take care.
Bye.